All right. Well, this evening I want us to turn to the book of Joshua. I love these Old Testament books and these Old Testament personalities. And so I want us to turn to the book of Joshua. We're going to look in the first chapter at verses 12 through 18. And I think this is an interesting story. And we're going to go in just a minute after we read this, and I'll give you a little bit of the backstory of kind of where this came from. We're all familiar with what Joshua said over in Joshua chapter 24 when the covenant was being renewed. Probably you have it hanging on the wall in your house. He said, you know, he's challenging the people to be faithful to the covenant. They're renewing the covenant. And he says, you know, you choose today whether or not you're going to serve God. But then he says, but as for me and my house, I will serve the Lord. And that may be the most famous verse or quotation from the book of Joshua. It's one of the more famous in the whole Bible, actually, probably, because like I said, you probably have that hanging on the wall in your house somewhere, or maybe you've got one of those door knockers on your front door, you know, that says, but it's for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And it's certainly a great truth and a great statement. But there's a statement made in the verses we're going to read this evening that I think is just as spectacular, coming from a group of people who had already received their inheritance. But Joshua was challenging them to be faithful to their promise and to live up to their word. And so I want us to read these verses, Joshua chapter 1, verses 12 through 18. Then we're going to take just a minute to go back and just kind of get an understanding, get the background of this, and then we'll just pull out three or four lessons or truths, I think, that apply to us that we see in this experience of the people of Israel in Joshua. So Joshua chapter 1, beginning in verse 12, it says, "But to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said, 'Remember the command that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you. The Lord your God is giving you rest and has granted you this land. Your wives, your children, and your livestock may stay in the land that Moses gave you east of the Jordan, but all your fighting men, fully armed, must cross over ahead of your brothers. You're to help your brothers until the Lord gives them rest, as he has done for you, and until they too have taken possession of the land that the Lord your God is giving them. After that, you may go back and occupy your own land, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you east of the Jordan toward the sunrise.' Then they answered Joshua." And here's what I want you to hear. This is such a great statement right here, okay? And this is where the title of this message comes from: Whatever, Wherever. And I want you to think tonight about, are you a whatever, wherever Christian? And are we a whatever, wherever church? Because if we are going to do what God wants us to do as we continue to move forward, as things continue to turn against us, I think, in our society and in our culture, we're going to have to be whatever, wherever Christians. And there are going to have to be more whatever, wherever churches if we're truly going to do what God wants us to do. So listen to what they say here. This is their response. These are these 2.5 tribes that are responding to Joshua. It says, "Then they answered Joshua, 'Whatever you have commanded us, we will do, and wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we fully obeyed Moses, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Whoever rebels against your word and does not obey your words, whatever you may command them, will be put to death. Only be strong and courageous.'" So you know the scene here. Joshua has taken over the leadership role of the people of Israel. They've wandered in the desert for 40 years. They've come to the Jordan River. They're about to cross over the Jordan River into the promised land, the land of Canaan. And Joshua is the new leader. Moses has recently died. And now it's Joshua's job to lead them across the river. And so what he does is, before they cross over, he goes to these 2.5 tribes, the tribe of Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh. Manasseh was one of Joseph's sons. And he reminds them of an episode that you find recorded in Numbers chapter 32. I know you probably don't spend a lot of time in your devotional time reading from the book of Numbers, do you? Any of y'all read Numbers this morning for your devotion? I didn't fear you did. It's about like reading the genealogies, isn't it? That's not devotional reading for most of us. But if you go back to Numbers chapter 32, Moses is still alive. And it's not long before where we are here in Joshua. It's toward the end of Moses' life. But they've come to the point of nearing the promised land. They're on the cusp of that. They're at the Jordan River. But they're east of the Jordan River and they haven't crossed over yet. And these 2.5 tribes come to Moses and they say, Moses, we really like the land where we are. Now this is the land east of the Jordan River and kind of east of the Sea of Galilee. So it's that land along the east side and then sort of northeast of the Jordan River. And these 2.5 tribes come to Moses and say, this is very fertile land. It's great pasture land for livestock, for cattle. And these tribes had a lot of livestock. And so they said, you know, we think that it would be good for us, and we think that this would be good land for us to have. Can we just inherit this? Can this just be ours? Can we just stay here? And Moses at first thinks that they are trying to get out of having to actually go into the promised land and push out the Canaanites and those kind of things. And so he's a little bit suspicious. Because he's like, well, you know, are y'all going to stop short of what God has for you? And they're like, no. We just see that this is good land. We would like for this to be our land because it's a good place for us to raise our cattle and probably their sheep. And, you know, because they were farmers. And they said, to tell you what, Moses, as a matter of fact, just to let you know that we're not trying to get out of something, if you'll let us have this land, when it comes time to cross over the Jordan River and go in and possess the promised land and go in and drive out the Canaanites, we promise you when that day comes, we'll go with everybody else and we'll help fight those battles. And Moses says, well, okay, as long as you're willing to do that, then you can have this land. And so that's the agreement that they made with Moses. And so as we read this story here, that's where we are. They're getting ready to go in the promised land, and one of the first things that Joshua does after he's been commissioned by God, and you know what the first part of this chapter is all about. You've heard it preached, and you've read it and had it in Sunday school classes, and you've read devotions on it, and you've gone to it because it's so inspiring. Be strong and courageous and all those kind of things. But now Joshua's about to really start the endeavor of crossing the Jordan River, going into the promised land. He knows what kind of battles and struggles they're going to face. And the first thing he does is he goes to these 2.5 tribes and says, now remember the agreement that you made with Moses. You have already received your inheritance. You've begun to settle that land, but don't forget, you promised that you would go across the Jordan River and you would help your brothers, these other tribes, inherit their possession that God has for them. And so that's where this comes from. And Joshua reminds them of that. And that's when they say, we promise you, Joshua, we will be true to our word. We will go wherever you tell us to go, we will do whatever you tell us to do. And as I think about that, I wonder, are we whatever, wherever Christians? Are we and will we be a whatever and wherever church? And there are some implications for us if we're going to be a whatever, wherever Christian and a whatever, wherever church. And so that's what I want us to think about tonight. What are the implications of that? One of the implications is this, is that if we're going to be a whatever, wherever church or a whatever, wherever Christian, we have to understand, yesterday's victories do not exempt us from today's endeavors. Yesterday's victories do not exempt us from today's endeavors. That their territorial claim, the tribe of Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh, that their territorial claim had already been realized, was no excuse for them to stay home and not participate in what was going to be required for the people of Israel to fully possess the promised land, for them to fully realize God's promise. You know, they could have said, we've already achieved what we wanted to achieve. We've had success. We've got what we needed. We don't have to go do that. But their agreement with Moses and therefore with God was that even though they had experienced victory, even though they had achieved success, they were still to go and participate in the action and in the battles that would be needed for the people of Israel to possess the promised land. And we as Christians and we as a church have to understand that our previous accomplishments and achievements and successes don't exempt us from future endeavors. In other words, we can't rest on yesterday's accomplishments. We can't rest on yesterday's successes. We can't just sit and glory and soak in our past, because there's more for us to do. Previous success, previous blessings, previous accomplishments, previous achievements are not a pillow for us to rest on, but they're examples for us to build on. You know, a lot of times we as Christians, we spend a lot of our time talking about the glory days or the good old days. And the glory days were great, and the good old days were wonderful. Except I remember my father telling me one time, you know, about the good old days were the good old days. But, you know, he said, it sure is nice, though, to have a washing machine that'll wash your clothes and you don't have to go scrub them with a scrub board. It sure is nice to have, you know, an electric oven or a gas oven that you can just stuff, put things in, and you don't have to haul wood in all the time. And my mother and father were like some of you probably, or certainly your mother and father. They grew up in the days where they literally had to go draw water out of a well and carry it in the house. And so the good old days were the good old days, but sometimes we remember them better than they were. And there's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with cherishing our past, and we should. But our past should never be just this comfortable blanket that we wrap ourselves in and we ignore the fact that, no, there's more for us to do. And it's not always going to be like it was, but there's more for us to do. We can't rest on our past. And sometimes I'm afraid that what we in the church are trying to do is not win the world to Christ, but we're trying to turn back the clock. And we'll never win the world to Christ by turning back the clock. Because what's done and gone is done and gone. And all we have is today and the future. And God is calling us forward. And, you know, we need to remember the ways that God has blessed us as a church. We need to remember the ways that God has blessed us individually or as a family in your life. And we certainly need to remember those, and we need to commemorate those. And we don't need to let go of that. But we need to remember those because it urges us and spurs us on to be willing to go through whatever's coming in the future to fully realize God's promise for our lives and for our church and for our community and for this world. So we should never, you know, hang on to the past like this. Oh, well, it's just got to be like the way it always was. No, there's more for us to do. We can't rest on our past accomplishments. We are to build on our past accomplishments. That's the task of every generation of Christians. And we all just need to understand that as our children come along and as our grandchildren come along, you know, the age-old issue between generations is that, well, here's what we think. We think that those that came before us are not as smart as us. And we think that those that are coming behind us are not as faithful as us. Now, you may have to go home and think about that tonight, okay? We think that those that came before us are not as smart as us. In other words, we all know that when we were teenagers, we thought our parents were stupid, didn't we? But then when you get to be an adult, you realize, well, they were kind of smart. But here's the other side of that, okay? The other side of that is that as we age and as we get older as Christians, what we do a lot of times is we turn around and we look at the generations coming behind us, and because they do things differently than us, we say, well, they're not as faithful as we were. No, they're going to be faithful, but what's happening is God is going to use them to reach their generation. And it's not going to be exactly like you and I have reached our generation. It doesn't mean that they're less faithful. It just means that they're different. And so their task is to not replicate what we have done, but to build on what we have done. Our task is not to necessarily just duplicate what generations before us did, but to build on what they did. See, our task is to pass along not necessarily just our faith, but the faith to generations that come behind us. And so we can't just insist that, we've had all these victories and we don't have to do anything else. It's just got to stay this way. If you read the Old Testament, even as you go through the book of Joshua, you'll find that what God told the people of Israel to do is when he would save them or deliver them or provide for them in some spectacular way, they would build a monument. Sometimes it was just a pile of stones. You remember when they crossed the Red Sea? And Moses said, it's actually when they crossed the Jordan River. When they got across the Jordan River, Joshua said, okay, now when we get across the Jordan River, what we're going to do is we're going to have the last few guys that come through. They're each going to pick up a stone out of the Jordan River. And what we're going to do is when we get on the promised land side of the Jordan River, we're going to pile those stones up. And here's the reason why. So that when your children and your grandchildren come to you and say, hey, Dad, or hey, Grandpa, what are these stones all about? You can tell them the story of how God was faithful to his people and he delivered us through the Jordan River into the promised land. And they weren't going to do that so that, it could just be a homecoming and dinner on the grounds kind of thing. They were going to do that because then what God wanted to happen was is for that next generation to say, oh, we serve a God who's faithful. We serve a God who delivers. We serve a God who provides. And you know what? I believe he will be faithful. I believe he will deliver. I believe he will provide as I move through life. He may not do it exactly like he did it for mom and dad and grandma and grandpa, but he will do it because that's the testimony that we have. And I'm not just going to sit and rest on my laurels and on the past, but I'm going to use that as an example to move forward faithfully and do what God would have me to do. Our victories, yesterday's victories, don't exempt us from today's endeavors. But another implication for us is that we must not be so concerned with our own needs that we ignore the needs of others. If we're going to be a whatever, wherever kind of Christian, we can't be so caught up with our own needs that we ignore the needs of others around us. It would have been natural for these 2.5 tribes to want to concentrate on settling the land where they had inherited, building homes, building villages, establishing their farms and getting their families settled. But this wasn't the time for them to consume themselves with building their life and withdrawing from the rest of the people. Joshua says, you have received your rest. In other words, you've received what God is going to give you. You've received your rest, but it's not time for you to sort of build that out. Now it's time for you to cross the Jordan River with your fellow Israelites, your fellow Hebrews, with your brothers, and help them find their rest. It's time for you to put their needs ahead of your own needs and your wants and your desires. It's time for you to help them. So they would help others gain the rest which God had given to them. A lot of times in churches, unfortunately, we become very inward focused. And we want to do more and more and more, but what we wind up doing is more and more and more for ourselves. more programs and more activities and more this and more that, and all of that is good stuff. And I'm not saying we need to get rid of anything, okay? But we can become very inwardly focused. But churches that grow and thrive, and Christians that are thriving in their life, they have learned the secret of getting themselves out of the middle of things, out of the center of things, and being able to see the needs that surround them. And understanding that there never comes a time where we can say, well, you know, we've got our little holy huddle here, and we do. We all love the fellowship that we have here and the people that are here, and it's great. But we should never turn our focus just inward on ourselves. But our attention has to be on those who are around us, seeing and being aware of and meeting the needs of those who are around us. You know, that's one of the things that's going on in the church today at large. I'm not saying this church, but in the church at large, many churches are becoming more and more inwardly focused, where it just sort of becomes this spiritual country club. And we're here just for the members and just for one another. And there are certain things that, yes, that we do that are mainly for the members and for one another, but that should never become our focus. Because if we're going to be a whatever, wherever kind of church, and you're going to be a whatever, wherever kind of Christian, you always have to say, God, give me eyes for the community around me. God, give me your vision for those around me. God, help me to see the needs, because where there are needs, there are what? Opportunities. God, help us to see the needs all around us. And God, may it never be all about me. May it never be all about us. But may it ultimately always be about you and the people you want to reach, because they're the people that you love. And God's called us to do that. And so if we're going to be a whatever, wherever kind of Christian and a whatever, wherever kind of church, we never can put our own concerns and our own needs and our own wants and our own desires ahead of others. But another implication is this that we see here, and I think this is interesting. We are called to the front. Notice what Joshua said. He said, you are to cross the Jordan River, Not as encouragers, not as a cheerleader group, not as reinforcements, but where did he say they were to be? He said, you're to be at the front. Now, various commentators say, well, that may not necessarily have meant literally in the front, that the word speaks of just arrayed for battle. So maybe it didn't literally mean the front, but here's what it did mean. It did mean you were to cross the Jordan River with the understanding and the expectation that you will be in the middle of the action. In other words, we're not going to put you at the rear. We're not just going to let you stay over here east of the Jordan and call you in as reinforcements if you're needed. You are going to cross the Jordan River in the middle of everybody else, armed, ready for battle, expecting that when the arrows and the spears start flying, you're going to be in the middle of it. And so we have to understand that we are called to the front. What does that mean? We're called to the action. When you experience salvation, it doesn't mean you've been plucked up out of the world to spend all of your time attending church events. Church events are great. I work at a church. I hope you come to everything we do. I hope you come to everything we do, because it makes me feel better about myself if I plan something and y'all all show up. So please come to everything that I ask you to come to, okay? But that's not why you've been saved. You've not been plucked up out of the world as a Christian to just be put on the sidelines in a holy huddle. You do need to come to church. You do need to be involved in the activities and the life of the church. But that's not the primary reason that you've been saved. We've been saved to be put in the game where the action is, to meet needs, to reach people, to make a difference in our community. to make a difference in our world. That's what a whatever, wherever Christian does. You see, most of us here tonight, probably all of us, I would guess, are where the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh were. And that is, they had received their rest. Many of, probably all of us here tonight have received our rest. What do I mean by that? We're saved. We have received, we've experienced salvation. Okay? So that's your rest. You're at peace with God. You have a relationship with Him through Jesus Christ. You've given your heart to Christ. But here's a question for you. Now you ask this of yourself. I'm going to ask it of all of us. Are we so busy enjoying the blessings and the peace of being a Christian that we're missing the opportunity of serving others all around us? Are we so busy enjoying the blessings and the peace and the churchy stuff of being a Christian that we're missing the opportunities to serve others that are all around us? You know, one of the things I love about our children's generation, and for many of you, your grandchildren's generation, and they're not perfect, I know that. They do things differently than we do. You know, I mean, I'm at that age where I make fun of the music my girls listen to, because I think it's stupid, but, you know, it's their music. My parents thought the music I listened to was stupid, too. I mean, we all know that. But the thing I love about this younger generation that's coming along, they don't want to just come sit in our chairs. Now, they will, okay? They will be involved in the church. They will come and take their place. But they want to make it real in their schools and in their community. And you say, well, no, that's, hey, I'm telling you, there are kids. The kids that go to this church that are over there with Eric tonight, we have some very, very seriously committed Christian young people. But they don't want to just come and sit and us talk to them all the time. They want to do. They want to serve. They want to be where the action is. So don't believe this next generation is going down the tubes. I mean, some of y'all are my age. They thought we were going down the tubes. I mean, that's just the way it is between generations. But there are some young people that are coming along, and these millennials that everybody talks about, the thing I like about them is that they're challenging us in the church to say, okay, I hear what you're saying. I get it. I'm down with it. I'm good with it. Now, let's go do it. And I'll be honest with you. You know, in the time that many of us grew up, that wasn't as much the focus. It really wasn't. I mean, I'll say for me and the churches I was in great churches, had a lot of great Sunday school teachers, choir directors, preachers, all that kind of stuff. But that wasn't as much the focus. So I think it's great that our kids and our grandkids are coming along and saying, hey, man, I love, you know, the message is great, but Jesus says things like we're supposed to go serve people. Let's go do that. Let's go do that. And I think that may be one of the areas where they're leading us, because they believe if they're going to be a Christian, they are called to where the action is. And they understand, and believe me, folks, if some of you here work in schools, and you know the action is in our schools. The action is in our community. The action's not in our churches, because I got news for you. A lot of these kids, where the action is in the schools, they're not coming to our church. I don't care how many hot dogs and hamburgers and pizzas we serve, they're not coming just because we're doing it, all right? And so we do, and I just want to say to you very, very gently, I really didn't plan to say this, but you know, we talk a lot about how prayer was taken out of schools, and I get all of that. But we need to be careful about going on about, well, there's no prayer in schools, there's no this in schools, because you know what? That hurts our teenagers that are here, that gather at Rome High School in the middle of their cafeteria, and pray together. I promise you, I wasn't doing that when I was 15 and 16 years old. And I know teachers aren't allowed to read the Bible and pray and all that kind of stuff. I get that. I'm like you. I wish it was still that way. Actually, with some of the teachers we have out there now, I'm not sure I really do wish it was that way, but you know what I mean. But I'm telling you, there is prayer, there is God, and there is Christ in our schools. Because there are godly teenagers, and there are godly teachers and administrators in our schools every single day. And they are where the action is. And that's where we're called to. That's where we're called to, is to the front where the action is. And that's an implication. If we're going to be a whatever, wherever kind of church or whatever, wherever kind of Christian, you got to understand you're called to where the action is. You need to come be at the church. We need to be here to encourage and inspire one another. But then we've got to go out there where the real work is, where the real opportunities are. Last thing here, and this is just a question, because these tribes, they said in answer to Joshua, they said, whatever you've commanded, we will do, and wherever you send us, we will go. What did they do? They gave Joshua a blank check. They didn't say that Joshua, you know, we'll go fight as long as, you know, we're in the right position or as long as we're in favorable terrain or any of that kind of stuff. They didn't say, Joshua, we'll go wherever as long as you don't get us too far from our wife and kids. They just said, Joshua, whatever you tell us to do, we're going to do it. Wherever you tell us to go, we're going there. It's a blank check. That was the kind of attitude it was going to take to possess Canaan. That's the kind of attitude all of them had to have. Whatever, wherever, it doesn't matter. It was just an open-ended commitment. Most of us aren't very fond of making open-ended commitments, are we? But yeah, I'll commit, but first of all, you got to tell me what all is going to be required of me. I need to know the details here. You know, I got to establish my boundaries and, you know exactly what's going to be involved in this. So I'm with you. You know, I really want to help, but kind of tell me how far this is going to go. But if we're going to truly be this kind of whatever, wherever Christian in church, we're going to have to look at God and say, God, whatever you tell us to do, we will do. Wherever you tell us to go, we will go. And it can't be, God, we'll do whatever except for this, this, and this. And God, we'll go wherever in Rome except for this zip code or this neighborhood. It just has to simply be whatever, wherever, God, you just give us the word, we're going, we're doing it. That's the kind of spirit that God's looking for in us. And that's the kind of spirit and that's the kind of attitude it's going to take to impact our communities, to win our community to Christ, to engage them with the gospel. Will we be a whatever, wherever church? Will you be a whatever, wherever Christian? You can't do anything less than that and glorify God. We can't do anything less than that and accomplish all that God wants us to accomplish. Those are two big, scary words, whatever, wherever. Don't utter them to God lightly, because if you say it in all sincerity, he's going to take you up on it. Doesn't mean you're going to Africa. It may just mean you're going to parts of Rome that you never thought you'd be in. It may mean you're going to parts of Atlanta that you don't like to be in. I don't know. But God's looking for whatever, wherever Christians and for whatever, wherever churches. Let's pray together.